The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. There is nothing I love more than a trip to the beach. Beach vacations offer peace, serenity, family fun, romantic moments, opportunities to experience nature, and so much more. I fucking love beach vacations, and if you do too, turn this episode up because our oceans are fucked, and we need to help it. We can all lend a helping hand in ensuring that future generations aren't swallowed up by the oceans. The threat is that real. My guest today is Christina Conklin, author of the Atlas of Disappearing Places. So let's get this fucked up episode started. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Pull up, get it. Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Welcome into the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, one of the authors of the Atlas of Disappearing Places, Our Coast and Oceans and the Climate Crisis, Christina Conklin. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a interesting book. It reminded me when I first opened it, almost like a textbook. Like, you guys are basically writing the textbook on what's going on in the oceans, and people should be more concerned about this, but they're not. You are obviously very concerned with this. So give us a quick overview of the book and why this is so important to everybody, or why it should be more important to the average person.
I hear you on the textbook mode. We did really want to get a lot of information across, but we wanted to do it in a story-based way that's really accessible. So each of the 20 stories is just a short little portrait of a place as it's being impacted by the climate crisis. So everything from some cities are actually sinking while the seas are rising. So we've got that story set in Shanghai. And then we've got, the melting of the polar ice cap and the Arctic. So, and everything in between. So there are these little short stories that talk about how things are going right now, which in most places, there's some bad news. And then it also has a future history, like a story from the year 2050 that talks about, okay, so what's going to continue to change? What changes can we not change? And what can we do to write a different story? So we tried to take this very kind of engaging storytelling approach. And the art is a big piece of that. So that because a picture says a thousand words.
Yes.
Yeah,
I love the amount of pictures that are in the book, and there are also graphs and bar graphs and stuff like that. For somebody like me that probably has a shorter attention span, it's much easier to learn from a book like this rather than just words all over the place, right? So that's one thing that I absolutely love about the book. But of all of these places that you guys, of all these stories that you guys told, which one for you kind of stuck out the most that we're in some trouble here?
I went to the Arctic, and actually I developed the art technique of painting on seaweed when I was up there, and I found the seaweed on the shores, and I decided to dry it and paint on it. And what I ended up doing in the book was painting the actual climate scientists' predictions, their maps in their sort of scientific journals, and painting it on the seaweed and then layering it onto a more traditional map so that we can see sort of the ocean taking over the earth. And that seemed like a good way to kind of convey the facts. And some of them are kind of hard facts. There's a lot more red ink on the maps than I imagined there was going to be. The red ink is showing the danger.
Of all of the places that you guys went, which one do you think would be the one that the average American would probably care the most about? Like, if you said, hey, we're waving here, this is a crisis, this is a problem. If we continue doing the things that we're doing,
yeah,
this place is not going to be here anymore for your visibility, right, or your
right
vacation.
Well, actually, I would say all of the cities in the world that we covered New York and Houston, San Francisco and London and Shanghai and all these different places. Cities have a real problem because a lot of them are built right on river deltas, right at the water's edge. And so New York, for example, has 520 miles of shoreline. Wow. And there's no way we're going to be able to build enough walls to protect all of New York. So there has to be this smarter way of thinking about the climate change that's coming. And we need to, move back, right? We need to allow that some of these changes are kind of have already started and are going to continue to unfurl over time. Seas are predicted to rise at least 3 feet this century, possibly more, and then keep going after that for hundreds of years. So there's no way to build that many walls. And I just really advocate in the book for smarter planning. Like in New York, we write a story about moving people to higher ground. It's, you know, it's not rocket science. We just gotta move a little bit. And then I'm creating like all these like wetlands and waterfront parks that could be really wonderful spaces. Moving the subways like up above ground again. They used to be above ground. We could move them above ground again. So every city is going to face these really critical decisions about how we interact with the shoreline. And we can either do this like old fashioned thinking of thinking that we can just, it's like man against nature and we can build a wall and that'll save us all. But it won't. I mean, because water's always going to find its level. Climate change is going to continue to be happening, even, you know, with our best reductions in fossil fuel consumption and, you know, changing to a clean economy. That has to happen if we're going to slow down some of the rates of change. But we need to do all of these things at the same time.
Right. And I think another big problem is that nobody thinks this is going to be an issue in their lifetime, right? Like, so I think a lot of people are like, yeah, well, you know, it's not going to affect me, which is, if you have kids, I have a kid, like, I don't want her to be dealing with, I want her to move to New York one day and then, you know, she can't live there anymore, right? Like, I don't want that to be her problem. But that seems to be a lot of people's mindset when it comes to climate issues, is that it's not my problem. The next generation will handle it. What would you say is the most endangered for somebody middle-aged like myself right now, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s? What do you think in our lifetime that we could see that would be the biggest change?
Well, it's interesting. Like the polar ice cap, for instance, we could have a blue Arctic Ocean in the next 20 years. So the Arctic Ocean, the Arctic ice cap, is like the air conditioning unit for the entire planet. And if you just turn that off because you've melted all the ice and we haven't dealt with fossil fuels and gotten to clean energy, and we have a blue Arctic Ocean in the summers, you know, in a couple of decades. So that just amplifies the level of heat extremes and the fires and that, you know, it just makes everything, it's one of the feedback loops in the Arctic that makes everything infinitely worse. And we need to pay attention to the things that are far away and seem remote, because they're all going to come back to our own backyards.
I don't think people think like that, though. I think they think that the Arctic, that sounds like a far away. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. That seems like a far way away from me. And so I think people here are like, yeah, that doesn't affect me. But it does affect you, and it affects a lot of people, right?
Right. So hundreds of millions. I mean, you know, people all over the world. So we have to have, I think, you know, compassion for folks who are, you know, living right on the coasts and maybe don't have the security and resources that we have in the U.S. We're really pretty lucky. We're pretty protected from a lot of these impacts. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we can't be complacent about that, because, you know, we just need to take care of the planet and each other. That's kind of a values-based thing. And part of what we need to do right now is really look hard at this consumer kind of throwaway culture we've just gotten real comfortable with in the past few decades, and think about, okay, well, what's really important to us? And isn't it actually really important to us to, you know, have a livable planet for future generations? We don't want to be the ones who wrote the obituary.
You guys traveled all over the world for this book. Of all the countries you went to, I mean, are we the worst one? Are we the most complacent here in America? Are we the worst at this?
Well, you know, I think we are. We're incredibly fortunate and incredibly, you know, in ways like real comfortable. There are a lot of European countries who are doing like more advanced kind of things with legislation to reduce fossil fuels. And that's really the main first step. I feel like the current administration's new laws about, trying to go carbon neutral is kind of a buzzword right now. What that's about is about kind of having us freeze where we are. But what we actually have to do is to dial carbon back, sequester more carbon than we spend. And we're a long way from that. Every country in the world is far away from accomplishing those goals. I mean, the last time we had this much carbon in the atmosphere, sea level rise were 50 to 80 feet higher.
Wow.
So, you know, that's real. And the ocean takes a long time to metabolize all of this carbon and warm up the way it is. And there's all these different effects on ecosystems in the ocean that I can go into as well. But just in terms of, you know, how this is all going to affect us, it's going to take a little while. But I believe people care about more than just us and just now. I think if we think about it, and COVID's been a good opportunity to think hard about, you know, our values and our priorities, and it's gotten us all to slow down a little bit. And I think that's a great opportunity to apply some of those same lessons to the climate.
I think some of the ecological lessons when lockdowns first started with COVID, and you saw, like, you know, water in Venice, Italy become clear for the first time, you know, in my lifetime anyway. I think we saw that, hey, if we just slow down and what is really necessary for us to live, what is not, and we kind of cut back on those things, a lot of things can happen. But I've also heard that, you know, every human being could recycle and do everything correctly, but if these big companies don't get, you know, don't have some kind of sanctions put on them, it's not going to matter what we do individually. Is that accurate?
No, I would actually, I'm going to say both and. Okay. So we have to do the individual changes and kind of reorient ourselves more in relationship with the natural world and, like, think about the kind of cultural, like, consumer choices we make. And also there have to be changes in, like, law and government to, you know, really to divest from fossil fuels and to create new incentives economically for new energy sources. And we just need to, you know, there's some great innovations. Like, there's a field called the rights of nature. So there's a whole lawsuits that are being brought to, if, you know, because corporations have legal personhood, well, why can't we give natural systems legal personhood?
Right.
And that's happening around the world. So there are innovative things happening, and we need to learn about them. We need to prioritize them. Talk with our friends and family and, you know, create some local projects that we can support. I feel like we can do it. I just know we can do it.
Yeah. I'm glad you're hopeful, because you're way more well versed on it than I am. And I don't have much hope. So you're making me hopeful, which makes me feel better.
Hope has to be active, right?
So yes.
It's like, hope can't be this, like, wishy-washy, like, oh, I wish it were better. It's all about taking what we know and transforming it into action.
You have a story there's a story in the book. You guys did Hawaii, correct? Like, there was a spot. I love Hawaii. One of my favorite places on the planet that I've been to. Maybe it gets dropped down the list the more I travel, but it's high up there right now. Can you kind of tell us what the gist of the story of Hawaii was, just because I know that's a popular vacation destination for a lot of us.
It's so beautiful there.
Yeah.
And as people who know, have been there, know, like, some of the beaches, they're like choking on plastic, right? Mm. So that chapter is about plastics and about how what we use, plastic is all a derivative of fossil fuels, right? So it's just another form of the fossil fuel industry. And they're actually, the plastic industry intends to make up all the difference and all the savings we make by going to, you know, electric cars and stuff, by just selling us more plastic. It's totally disgusting. And so, you know, we need to make different choices. And the story in Hawaii is about a grandma turtle who chokes on a piece of plastic. And this is happening all the time. Millions of seabirds. And I live at the coast, and I'm always seeing seals wash up that have died because they're tangled up in plastic. And so it really does come down to this kind of addiction we have to fossil fuels. It's made our lives so easy and cheap just in the past few decades. But we used to know how to make stuff, and we used to know how to fix stuff. And we don't have to have this disposable culture that we've kind of has become a little bit too easy for us all. And it's not that we have to go do something hard. It's just sort of about remembering, to me, more about, like, natural processes, our relationship with the natural world, and sort of saying no to this story we've been told about convenience culture and consumer culture.
I saw a meme the other day that said something to the effect of, you never really throw anything away, right? Like,
there's
everything.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, some people ask me, like, where can I move that's safe? Well, there's no way, right? You can't throw something away. We're all connected. And, you know, I think people are finding these climate impacts are reaching farther and farther, right? Whether it's fire or drought or flood or whatever. So instead of running away, we need to sort of slow down and, like, turn toward it and learn some hard facts and talk to each other and, you know, and put some pressure on our, you know, representatives and make some changes in our spheres of influence. So, because if we all own it, we can make the change. If it's just up to a couple people, it's not going to happen.
We have to first all admit that we have a problem, right? Last question, I'll let you out of here. What can the average person, what can the average person do to kind of help with this stuff? What action can we take?
I feel like, you know, everybody's got friends and neighbors and a community, and there's all sorts of things we can do locally and in our own lives. So, you could start a book club, that wants to learn real intentionally about climate and the environment and then talk to people. So I think learning and making it a real priority is the main thing. And that, because that will then, you know, filter out to into the culture in general. And, you know, our politicians will pay more attention because they always follow, right? The people lead,
right?
The politicians follow. So it's about lifting it up and this idea of having a fossil free economy, really thinking hard about how we live and you know, and the choices we make. There are some major changes coming, and some of it's going to be real expensive to deal with as a country. So, you know, there's some hard facts in all of these stories, but also a lot of hope.
All right, Christina Conklin. The book is The Atlas of Disappearing Places, Our Coast and Oceans in the Climate Crisis. Great book. You guys did a great job with this. I can't wait to finish reading it. And thank you for giving me hope. And thank you for taking time out to do this.
So pleased to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even a 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Christina Conklin. Go check out her book, The Atlas of Disappearing Places. A great read. Brand new episode drops next week. My guest will be author of The Inner Work of Racial Injustice, Healing Ourselves and Transforming Our Communities, Rhonda McGee. Definitely looking forward to that. Make sure you follow me on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, everything. Is at DolaWhite101, DOLEWITE 101. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast no matter the platform you're listening on. If you're listening on Apple, rate and review. I always definitely appreciate all the reviews I can get and rate, especially if you're going to drop them 5 stars. If you're going to hold back from the 5 stars, maybe don't rate it and maybe wait until I give you a 5-star episode in your opinion. I don't know. I'm just saying I need them 5 stars. Anyway, brand new episode drops next Wednesday. Thank you for checking out the podcast. I'm out.